I'm looking forward to this Sunday, July 4th, to challenge Yokozuna at the WWF Stars and Stripes Challenge. Yokozuna, you said nobody can body slam you. At the King of the Ring, you proved it when the immortal Hulk Hogan was proven to be mortal. Yokozuna, I'm going to be next to body slam you and put you to the ground.
Oh, it's me. It's me, Beverly Hills 90210. I'm going to slam you, big stinky Yokozuna, right in the Hudson River. Woo, yeah.
Welcome to Main Event Status Radio with your host, the Dirty Dog Darcy, and Mr. Beverly Hills 90210.
Recording live from the intersection of Sunset Boulevard and Bad Street, Minnesota. This is Main Event Status Radio. I am the Dirty Dog Darcy, as usual, and joined by the greatest partner I could find to host a podcast with me, Mr. Beverly Hills, 90210. How's it going, Beverly?
It's going great. How are you?
Oh, a tad tired, but that's nothing usual out of the Dirty Dog department.
That's me too, man.
So how's your summer been?
Oh, it's over. I had my first week of school this week.
That's horrible. I hope you, I hope the first day of classes you'll tell your students, listen up, you maggots.
Well, I didn't. I should have. Now that we're a week in, I feel like that would serve me a lot better than what I did do.
So, I know we didn't talk about this off air, but I thought I may as well ask anyway. Did you watch SummerSlam last weekend?
No, I haven't had really a chance between school and football to watch much outside of what we watched this week for podcast.
Have you heard about what happened between John Cena and Brock Lesnar?
Yeah, I know the results. What? Tell me your thoughts. You watched it, right?
I loved it. I went over to one of my buddy's place, you know, about a half hour away, to watch, you know, watch SummerSlam, because it's been a while since him and I hung out for a while, a friend of the show. And, went over to his place to hang out and see, you know, see him and his wife and their little nine-month-old baby boy. And, we watched SummerSlam, and, well, the card was decent. I felt like a lot better than last several pay-per-views that WWE put out this year. When it came to the main event match, Brock hit a F5 within the first, I think, 45 seconds of the match. Got a two count. Dominated most of the match, and then first thing I thought was, John Cena's going to win.
Yeah, that's what I would, if that's how, if I were watching it live, that's probably what I would think as well.
And then when the three count happened, when Brock hit the second F5, I almost crapped my pants. Because I remember that there at Extreme Rules 2012 match, Brock had most of the match and Cena won. And the Undertaker match from WrestleMania this year, granted, Undertaker had a concussion early in the match, and that's why the match wasn't as great as people originally expected it to be. I just thought, you know, Brock, you know, because Super Cena and la-di-da-di-da, you know, internet fans build up Cena, he can never lose. I was surprised to see Lesnar walk out as champ.
I would agree. I don't know. I thought that he was going to win, but I don't know. There's always that chance.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm happy to see Lesnar win just because him defeating The Undertaker, I want to see them. If Brock was going to be the one to defeat Undertaker, end of the streak at WrestleMania, I want to see them build up Brock to build up the next main event star.
Right.
And I think the way that Brock took out Cena was probably one of the best ways. You know, with him, you know, it sounds like it's going to be Brock and Cena for another match at Night of Champions. I hope Brock walks out as champion again.
Yeah, what? I don't know if that's the best idea. What's your opinion on doing a rematch right away?
At least I understand that, because I don't know who else is ready to face Cena, or to face Lesnar for the title.
I saw one person had put maybe, like, just, like, Big Show or Mark Henry, one of those guys.
That's
maybe
what I was thinking, too, because I was thinking ways to be kind of cool to see, you know, maybe Cena at Night of Champions, and maybe the next pay-per-view is Hell in a Cell, maybe Cena again in Hell in a Cell, Brock taking, you know, 3 straight victories, then, you know, next couple pay-per-views, you know, could be Big Show, could be Mark Henry, can be Batista, you know, maybe Daniel Bryan, depending on if he's able to come back by then. Because I would love to see Brock hold it to WrestleMania and face maybe Roman Reigns.
All right, yeah, I've seen them kind of point in that direction.
Yeah, at least that's what I've been hearing on the dirt sheets, that early estimations for the main event match at WrestleMania would be Brock Lesnar to defend the WWE World Heavyweight title against Roman Reigns.
Mm, yeah.
But maybe. I guess we just got to wait out the ride and see where they take us.
Yeah, let it play out.
So I'm not going to complain too much about... I guess I'll just kind of question having the rematch with Cena so soon with how dominant Brock was. But I just want... I guess I'll just, you know, hold off on me questioning them more and see how it plays out.
Sure. Yep. Yep. You can look back on it and see what it looks like.
So we might as well go into episode 5 for Main Event Status Radio.
Let's do it.
Going back in time to Monday, June 28th, 1993, episode 23 of WWF Monday Night Raw. Going back to the Mid-Hudson Civic Center to Poughkeepsie, New York.
Poughkeepsie. I apologize to any Poughkeepsie viewers, listeners, on behalf of Dirty Dog Darcy.
I never claimed to be the best person to pronunciate words, Jack.
Poughkeepsie. You already got me laughing, Dirty Dog.
Poughkeepsie?
I got tears rolling down my cheeks.
With a tear in my eye.
With a tear in my eye, Poughkeepsie, New York.
Poughkeepsie. Whatever. We're at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center for Monday Night Raw. Are you okay over there, Beverly?
I'm good.
Do you need a mellow yellow?
Actually, I do. Let me go grab it right now.
So, yeah, the show opened up with the classic Monday Night Raw opening, the classic theme song and video, which makes me smile.
I'm hydrated and ready to go.
Good. So what's your thoughts on the classic Raw opening video and theme song?
You know I love it.
And the 5 shows that we reviewed has been Raw, and, you know, every show I had to talk about the Monday Night Raw opening.
Alright, you got it.
And then, I'll see Vince McMahon welcomes us to Monday Night Raw. Who else is with Vince at the announcer's booth?
We got Macho Mean, and we got Bobby Heenan in an awesome purple and yellow Monday Night Raw wind jacket.
What's your thoughts on the attire Macho was wearing?
Oh, it was really wild, but I can't really think of it off the top of my head what it looked like.
It was something like half and half of like black background with white polka dots for one half, and like the other one was like the floral couch covering or whatever.
Insane, right? Macho Man was just out of control.
When I saw his attire, I thought about you, Beverly, and how a couple weeks ago, a couple shows ago, we talked about Macho and all that and his crazy attire.
Oh, yeah, and this is another one of along that lines.
So then, yeah, they put over what we'll be seeing on Monday Night Raw for this episode. Shawn Michaels versus Kamala and Krone Crush Bra versus Bastion Booger. And we also said that the WWF champion, Yokozuna, will be around for a very special interview.
Yes.
Then we might as well go into the first match.
Right.
For the
Kamala and Shawn Michaels.
For the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship.
You got it.
When Shawn Michaels came out with a beautiful title, Intercontinental title with a white strap with as his bodyguard.
Yeah. You know, Diesel's there. Do you see Diesel's jacket?
You see Diesel's mullet.
The whole ensemble, Scream 1993. His jacket's like white denim, and it's got those little mirrors on it, and it has like silver marbles almost looking. It's just, I just thought it was ridiculous.
Well, that's, 1993 WWF. Which is apropos.
I lived through 1993, and I never had a jacket like that, and it makes me a little sad.
Well, so see ya. How your wedding day is coming up soon, and I've been invited to come to the wedding, so I may have to buy a jacket like that for your wedding gift.
You would make me so happy. So happy. If you wore one jacket like that.
Would the next Mrs. Beverly Hills be approving of that?
The next Mrs. Beverly Hills? How about the first Mrs. Beverly Hills?
There will be no next.
She's in the other room. She said there will be no next.
Well, they're better up. Yeah, next. No, they're Mrs. Beverly Hills.
She held up her hand with the ring on it, saying that that's what it meant.
As I say, I'm happy that we had a run-in from Mrs. Beverly Hills.
She did. She did a total run-in.
I love it.
Yes. Okay. So anyways, yes, I would love if you wore the jacket.
So then we might as well get into the match night, into the bodyguard.
So I love Kamala's music. It's been in my head since I watched it early this morning for the last 6 hours. The
I love it. Beat. Also, say talk about theme songs. I last night at work, I was, had my iPod on shuffle after I got to listen to some podcast. I heard the Sensational Sherry's version of Shawn Michaels' theme song, and I still have that running through my mind.
Nice.
He's just a sexy boy. He's not your boy toy. I love it.
Awesome.
So you were talking about Kamala, Bobby made a comment about how Kamala was hungry for Shawn.
Yeah, he said that he was gonna, like, eat him, right? Like, he was gonna put him in some boiling and roast him.
Yes, then I know Savage made a comment saying, "You're right! He's hungry for the Intercontinental Championship."
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah!
Yeah, I first noticed, I was a little concerned because Kamala was without his advisor, Reverend Slick. But then later in the match, they said that he was still with him. So I don't know why he wasn't there that night, but
must be pay cuts.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe.
Then I know we talked about this before with another Kamala match, but Shawn Michaels put out his hand to shake his hand with Kamala. Kamala was confused on what to do.
Yeah, but I liked it. He has shown some progress in the about 4 or 5 months from the last one we watched, because he was listening to the fans and he didn't shake Shawn's hand.
Yeah, I did mention that too. Yeah, Kamala was looking at the fans, kind of, looking at them for support and guidance on what to do.
Yep.
Then
Shawn kicked him anyway, or what did he like
punched him? Yeah, I think Shawn punched him or nailed him in the eye or whatever. When Kamala was looking at the fans.
Yeah.
But Kamala was able to gain the advantage right away from Shawn and jumped up in the air like he was going for a leapfrog, and Shawn fell backwards. Do you catch that? Do you catch that spot?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Made me laugh. So far, the match is starting out at a 5-star rating.
Yeah. I really liked this match a lot, actually. I thought they worked well together, and it was short enough that it wasn't, exposing Kamala's weaknesses. Because, I mean, he's, it's Kamala. He's not going to have a five-star match. That's just what he is. But I think, like, he's really getting into this, you know, you are a man character. And you're working that well. And, Sean is working well with him, so.
Well, Sean is, you know, a great performer. Sean can help carry Kamala into a great match.
Right.
Which
right.
We saw.
Well, they work well. They're working well together.
Yeah, which we saw here.
Right.
I know this match went through a commercial break, and, yeah, when we go to a commercial break when Sean was jumping off the second rope and was caught in a bear hug.
Yep.
When we came back from the commercial break, Kamala was on top of Sean, giving him a bear hug pin kind of thing.
Yeah.
Only to get consecutive two counts.
Have we gotten to the part where Kamala shook Sean's hand and then bit it?
I don't remember that, but we may as well talk about this.
Oh my gosh, that was my most favorite part of the match. He stuck his hand out for Sean, shook it, and then bit it.
That's funny.
It was great.
So another note I joked on is that a few times Shawn Michaels went for a step over toe hold, and Kamala grabbed his hair and pulled Sean down to the mat for a counter. Right. Sean kept on going over to the ref and complained about it as a classic heel. Made me laugh.
Yes.
I know Sean, then Kamala was able to fight or get back to his feet and fight back with a few chops, and he slapped his belly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my.
Then Savage had to say, I love it when he slaps his belly.
Great line, and I totally agree.
Yes. Then I know, yeah, Kamala splashed Sean when he was on his stomach. Oh, yeah, well, I guess it was towards the end of the match.
Yep.
Sean, I can't remember how Sean fell to the mat, but Kamala went for, like, a big splash when Sean was on his stomach, and Kamala tried to pin him when he was on his stomach.
Yeah.
And then the referee, Earl Hebner, by the way, ran over to, you know, like he's an accountant and told Kamala, you got to roll him over to his back. Then Kamala rolled him over a few times. Then Sean was still on his belly and tried to, you know, Kamala tried to pin him again.
Oh, man. And I don't, you know, I guess this is the mark of a match that I like because it's 20 years later. I know that Kamala never wins the title, but when he's laying on his, Sean is face down, I'm like, no, Kamala, roll him over.
Yes.
I was into it. I was completely into the match.
Same here. Then now it's the Big Daddy Cool Diesel jumped up on the ring apron, distract Earl Hebner and Kamala, giving Sean a chance to jump up, hit Kamala in the back of the head with the Sweet Chin Music, which Kamala fell backwards, not forwards.
Yeah, the sweet back music.
The sweet back of the head music?
Yeah, must be.
The sweet concussion music.
Oh, I guess.
Well, the sweet African music for Kamala. Then Sean picked up the victory.
Yep. And Diesel comes in and adds to it after the match.
Yeah, what's your thoughts on Sean hitting the Sweet Chin Music from behind and Kamala falling backwards, not forwards?
It's one of those times where you have to not think about the logics and the logic and the physics of what it would do.
Fair enough.
You just have to accept that when Kamala gets hit, he'd fall on his back.
Fair enough. Then, yeah, you talked about Diesel running in and attacking Kamala, because Kamala, I think, attacked Sean, and Diesel ran in to help out his boss.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also talked about the rating of the match. I rated this match a 3.5-star match.
Whoa!
Yes. Because I was highly entertained, the crowd was hot, and both had great chemistry together.
Whoa.
The fans were into all characters, Earl Hebner, Kamala, Shawn Michaels and Diesel, and the three-man announce team helped the fans at home seeing the match, besides putting over the Yokozuna Body Slam Challenge that was happening the coming weekend.
Wow, I feel like, is this the dawning of a new Dirty Dog? Like, this is a kinder, gentler Dirty Dog, nicer to the matches?
This might be the Dirty Dog who's starting to become a man.
You are a man. You are a man.
So what do you rate this match, Dirty
Dog? I gave it two and three quarter stars.
Holy crap, I rated this match higher than you?
I know, I think this is the first time that you've rated
first it. Time in main event status radio history.
Well, I'm not going to go four stars for Kamala and Shawn Michaels, so I don't think I can go higher.
Well, I didn't give this four stars. I didn't give this match a five-star rating, Jack.
You should.
I'm not going to rewrite history, Daddy-O. I'm not Vince McMahon.
All right.
I don't have that much power.
You got it.
Yeah, then, yeah, we talked about the after-the-bell shenanigans when Kamala attacked Shawn, the Diesel attacked Kamala.
Yes.
And then we go to a commercial. We went to a commercial saying that Hulk Hogan couldn't body slam Yokozuna at the King of the Ring pay-per-view. And that Yokozuna's been squashing people ever since. And
yep.
Yokozuna is challenging anybody to come body slam him on the 4th of July that Sunday at the WWF Stars and Stripes Challenge on the USS Intrepid.
You got it.
I'm kind of excited for that, Jack.
I was too. This is one of those times that we got the TV. Man, I was so excited for the Stars and Stripes Challenge. Little 6-year-old Beverly Hills.
Then we go to Vince McMahon in the ring. He welcomes the World Wrestling Federation champion, Yokozuna, and his manager, Mr. Fuji.
USA, do it, do it.
Yeah, then, yeah, you quoted Macho Man for saying, USA, USA, do it, do it. Which you said it in like, not like, yeah, he said USA, USA, then he said do it, in like different kind of beat. Like, come on, Macho. But as one who owns Macho Man's rap album, kind of makes sense.
God, I love that you hold that. I wrote that my cat loves Yokozuna. She was sitting on the side of the couch when I was watching this, and when Yokozuna was on the screen, she couldn't take her eyes off of it.
Yokozuna is one handsome devil.
You got it.
And Mr. Fuji was saying that he wants to embarrass the American people by challenging any American athlete to try to slam his Yokozuna on the United States Independence Day.
What's your thoughts on Fuji as like a promo or as a manager in general?
I guess for Yokozuna, I thought he was good.
Okay.
When they'll add Jim Cornette, that would help out because Jim Cornette's a great talker. But since Mr. Fuji is Japanese, and they're trying to put over Yokozuna as a Japanese wrestler, it makes sense to not have Yoko talk much and have Mr. Fuji be his mouthpiece.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to think there are actors, other Japanese-Americans... Who are better than Mr. Fuji. Just because, like, in this, you know, I don't know. It feels like McMahon had to just lead him along the whole time. Like, oh, do you want to embarrass the American athletes? Yes, we want to make fools of the American athletes. Like, it's all he was doing was just, like, repeating what McMahon said. And I thought that, I don't know, I thought that really, like, drug it down.
Yeah. So I know one of the next notes I wrote down about this promo is that seems like McMahon is putting over someone to randomly show up and slam Yokozuna.
Yeah, a little foreshadowing.
I know. Which was pissing Fuji-san off. The Fuji claimed that Yokozuna will be the WWF champion forever.
Yeah, I know. I heard that too. And then he laid out all the plans that he was going to do. So he was going to carry it until he retired. Then he was going to bring it to the Japanese Imperial Palace and give it to the prince, I believe. And he was going to keep it there forever or whatever. Something like that.
Then McMahon asked Yokozuna a question. Then Yokozuna, like, blew him off. Then Fuji asked Yoko a question, I assume in Japanese. Then Yoko tried to speak English in a Japanese, I guess, accent, saying that, telling us that American athletes are like American products. They're crappy.
I thought that was one of the worst decisions they ever made.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, and they didn't do it much after this, so they may have learned their lesson. But oh my gosh, that was so bad because you can so tell that English is his first language.
Yeah, and especially how,
you know,
how clear he spoke in English.
Exactly.
The Vince ended the interview with leading the crowd on the USA chant.
Yeah, let them hear ya.
Which makes me laugh because at work last night, well, yeah, as I mentioned before in the podcast, I work until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and one of the night drivers from the Virginia branch from northern Minnesota, he used to watch wrestling back in the day from like the 70s and 80s, and he heard that you and I, Beverly, host this podcast.
All right.
And he was, you know, kind of he's off and on talking to me if I work, you know, stack his trailer or whatever, or work close enough to, he would talk to me about, you know, some old wrestling. And last night at work, well, it'd be like this morning, like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, he would look at me and say random catchphrases.
Oh, nice.
Like, well, his name is Chuck. So he's okay. Like, finally, Chuck has come back to St. Cloud. Or a Dan Hutt. And one time he did look at me and said, USA! And all that, and made me think of Jim Duggan.
Awesome.
Made me laugh. So, Chuck, if by chance you're listening,
what up in
Virginia, Jack?
All right.
So then we go to a inner or promo from George Martin from the New York Giants.
Yeah, and you know, I pride myself knowing sports knowledge. I usually like use it to be mean and show that you don't have the sports knowledge, but man, I have zero clue of who George Martin is. I have zero clue of Jim Campen. No memory, no knowledge of them whatsoever.
So yeah, I did, you know, if they didn't have their names and the teams that they play for on the screen, I wouldn't know who they were either.
No, me neither.
So I was like, George Martin from the New York Giants, Jim Campen from the Green Bay Packers. Then Tatanka from the WWF came on
screen. That was kind of weird. I don't know. I feel like if you're going to do two athletes, just either stick with the athlete theme or, yeah, I don't know. I thought the inclusion of Tatanka was strange.
Well, same here. And, yeah, how they didn't do it. Well, I thought it was strange, too, that, yeah, they put George Burton and Jim Campen's name up on the screen and didn't do nothing for Tatanka, which...
You got to know who Tatanka is already.
That is true, but... I did, you know, from my notes, I did say, you know, each guy from their team, and I did put on Tatanka from the WWF.
Yeah.
Which I would have loved if they would have put his name up on the screen and said WWF underneath his name, yeah, saying what team he plays for.
You're right.
Or this would have been racist, but even put Native American underneath his name. I know it's bad, but.
No, I'm with you.
Or Native American wrestler underneath his name or whatever.
You know. Native American wrestler.
It would have made me laugh. I know.
It's making me laugh right now. So yes.
Then they go to a commercial and come back with Iron Mark. I even put his name down in my notes as Mark Iron Mike Sharp and Barry Horowitz.
Yes, I wrote Jobber Royalty. Two of the best known jobbers in all of history.
So those two were in the ring waiting to face the smoking guns and their nasty mustaches.
I wrote that it looked like they're going to try to shoot the jobbers.
Yeah, no,
they're
right.
Going to finish it off early.
You know, just because of this match, I have, just for you, Beverly, and for the main event listeners, I have to crack another can of Mellow Yellow.
Awesome. So, I don't know if we've covered smoking guns matches before. Have I ever?
Yeah, we have once, I think.
Yeah, have I ever talked about the fact that I think wrestling in jeans is a big questionable decision?
No, you haven't, but I did. The first note I wrote down, which I want to ask you, then you can go on to what you want to talk about. Wouldn't it be uncomfortable to wrestle in skin-tight jeans?
Well, I would completely agree with you. And that is what leads me to this story I wanted to tell. So I told you that this week I started school.
Yeah.
Shoot job teacher / football coach. And I coach junior high football. So these are kids who have, you know, learned the ropes, if you will. So what day is it? Thursday? We had a couple new kids in football. One of our guys comes out. He's wearing jeans and a polo shirt. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this is about the worst decision I've ever seen. Because this week it was probably about 90 degrees on Thursday. And he's in his jeans and he's running around. And then the other coach goes, hey, you got a little chafe in those dungarees? And watching the smoking guns made me think of the boy in the dungarees.
Well, yeah, because I know, I work at night, and I also concrete building, and once it's humid, it stays in the building, and I don't know how that kid was able to do that, or I don't know how the smoking guns rustled in jeans, because wearing shorts during the summer, for me, that's even horrible.
Yeah.
You know, with sweat and all that, so I don't know how people can do that.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why I think the gene choice is a questionable one at best.
So then we may as well go into the match. I didn't really take that many notes down for this match, so if you want to take this match over, Beverly.
Sure. So I said that first, Mike Sharp is the loudest wrestler ever. Everything he does, you can hear. He's so loud.
I like that kind of wrestler, though.
Well, that's your man then, Iron Mike Sharp. Most of the match is taken by the guns, just as you would expect. I wrote that Barry Horowitz looks really good in this match. I thought he was standout in this match. And I wrote that whenever he gets in, it gets better. And he hit a really nice Northern Lights suplex on Bart. That was my favorite.
Because before the beautiful Northern Lights suplex, I did know, I don't know which smoking gun hit a small package on Iron Mike Sharp. But I know we talked about this before we recorded the show, that I wrote down a line from Savage saying that, you know, about the small package, a move that Macho said, and I quote, "That was a big package because Iron Mike Sharp is a big guy."
And he is a big guy.
I had to pause it on my Roku just for I can write that line down.
Good choice.
Macho Man, thank you very much.
After Barry was in control, Bart was able to fight out and get Billy in on the hot tag. And I just wrote that he had some really kind of sloppy-looking drop kicks all around for everybody. And that set up the finish. Do you have anything you want to add before we get to the finish of it?
That, like you said, Barry hit a beautiful Northern Lights suplex on Bart. Only got a two, which sucks. I wrote down, smoking guns won with a double team maneuver. Whatever.
It was a one maneuver, and it was a whatever. What's your rating on this match?
My rating for this match was 3/4 of a star.
All right. Everything is right in the world. I gave this 2.25 stars. We're back to how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, so you rate a match higher than me.
Yes.
It's about time. Because I did write down that, you know, the match was okay. I had a tough time getting to the match. And the fans didn't really seem that interested either.
Right.
It might be because I don't care about the smoking guns.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I think you would rate, you know, however you think of this, basically goes on what you think the smoking guns are like.
So up next, we have a special interview with Money Incorporated.
Yes.
Then Vince brings us back to the week prior when the 1-2-3 kid fought Razor Ramon's quote-unquote stealing his money for facing him.
Then yep, we got that. Showed that highlight.
Then we go to an Acro Pro commercial with
Razor, right?
Lex Luger.
Oh, Lex Luger, my bad.
And I wrote down in my notes, could this be the guy Vince was preluding to in the interview with Yokozuna?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't... Oh, talk about Lex Luger and I don't know!
Oh, your t-shirts are too tight too, Billy!
When, yeah, last night at work, after lunch, I had my iPod on shuffle when I was listening to music, when I was done listening to a podcast, and a song came up that I swear Uncle Cracker wrote and recorded for Lex Luger. The song is called I Don't No.
Unless he's talking about Billy, what's his name?
I don't remember. I don't remember your Uncle Cracker mentioning Billy, what's his name, or Super Brawl Saturday.
Super Brawl. Super Saturday.
I don't know.
I don't know what it's called. What is it called? I don't know.
But when that song came on my iPod, I thought of Lex Luger.
Nice.
Then we go to another commercial for Hasbro toys with Randy Savage putting them over.
You got it.
You know, with the awesome wrestling toys with Hulk Hogan.
Yep. Which I had that Hulk Hogan on.
Which I found kind of quinky dinky dink because, well, I had the Hogan too, but since this was aired after Hogan left the company.
Had he officially though?
I don't know this is after the King of the Ring pay per view and I
Yeah, that was his last match. I don't know like when he was quote unquote done.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know.
But anyway, we come back from the commercial and Vinnie Mac is back in the ring and welcomes Money Incorporated. And Irwin mentioned that they have a return match in their contract that gives the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions the Steiner Brothers.
Yes.
Then McMahon was talking about money and all that. I don't remember, but I did write down a line from Ted DiBiase.
Okay, what you got?
He said, talking about holding on to your money, McMahon. That line made me LOL.
Nice.
Just because, you know, how later on Vince would claim that he was a billionaire and how he bought WCW and ECW and with the network, WWE network, and you know the stock market, the stock WWE stock, you know, tripled in price and became a billionaire. Then it went back down to being in the $10 range, and how he lost millions of dollars. Just that line made me laugh. From Teddy Jassy.
Glad you got a laugh out of it.
Talk about holding on to your money, McMahon. Talk about going back to the podcast, Beverly.
Got it, brother.
So yeah, DiBiase talks about Razor loses his money to the 1-2-3, calling him stupid for losing his cool and having a nobody beat him on national TV.
Right. My neighbor just came.
Another run-in?
Yeah, well, kind of. I think he's doing the laundry out there. Oh. Sorry for the interruption.
That's fine.
Shoot, I gotta get back on my train of thought. Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting that they were kind of like foreshadowing the Razor Ramon face turn. I didn't, because was he was a heel at this time, right?
Yeah, because I think it was a week prior when that match with the 1-2-3 Kenny Razor happened.
Yeah, so it was pretty quick for, you know, another heel to already be criticizing him. I thought that was kind of interesting. I didn't remember it going like that.
Yeah, because I know DiBiase said that the kid was super smart for running off with the money.
Right.
And DiBiase said that they could find a good job for Razor, maybe as a maid.
I laughed at that.
And I noticed, you know, since we talked about IRS being super sweaty in his matches, I did note that DiBiase seems to be super sweaty.
I did too. I noticed that definitely he had a bead of sweat rolling down his forehead.
Then we come back from a commercial break, and Adam Bomb was coming out to the ring. And he was going to face P.J. Walker. And I wanted to ask you about if you knew anything behind why Johnny Polo was managing Adam Bomb.
Actually, I had a note that said exactly the same thing. How, you know, I don't know. There needs to be more of a connection, I thought, between managers and who they're with. Because I think there's no sense of why Johnny Polo would be with a man who's allegedly, like, irradiated, you know?
I guess if we would, yeah, I guess if we would be watching Raws and Order and saw, you know, video packages. Well, I don't know if they would have shown video package on Raw or the other shows, but I'm sure that it may have been explained, but yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I still don't think it makes sense in general, though.
Yeah. So I might as well take this match over.
All right, go ahead.
And, it was pretty much a squash match. That Adam Bomb bombed Walker and manhandled him. Polo was yelling at us to look at Adam Bomb.
Yes.
I put in my notes, I'll quit taking notes to look at him. And I did. So I think Johnny Polo yelled in 1993 to tell me in 2014 to look at Adam Bomb and quit taking notes. Then Bomb gave an awesome clothesline to Walker outside of the ring.
Yeah.
Then, and all that. Then, right around this time, he was getting towards the end of the match, and I was thinking that it would be awesome if Adam Bomb's finisher was a power bomb. When I was writing that note down, Adam Bomb hit the Adam Smasher, which was a power bomb.
Yeah, I think the Adam Smasher is a dumb name.
I wrote that down, like
the Adam Bomb or something. I don't know.
I wrote that down. Like, what a quinky dink that. When I was thinking that, writing that down, he hit his finisher, the power bomb. And I was thinking it would make sense to name it the Atomic Bomb.
Yeah, I don't know, something like that.
And I had to say, because the power bomb finisher was a silly name, I gave the name of his finisher -5 stars. So the winner was Adam Bomb. I gave this match a 1-star rating.
I gave it 1.25 stars, so we're very close.
So yeah, you know, I put down that it was a decent squash match because it was short. I like short squash matches.
Yeah, well, especially, yeah, you know, you don't want to get too long because then either you're repeating moves or the squashee is getting too much offense. So you don't want either of that. I thought it was perfect in length, too. You got all the power moves in and finished it off.
Then we go to a commercial break and we see the same commercial that we saw earlier about Yokozuna, the Stars and Stripes Challenge for that following Sunday on 4th of July. Then we go to the main event of the match, or main event of the night, Bastion Booger versus Krona Crush Bra.
Shaka Bra.
What can I say? You said you didn't watch this match, right?
That'll be correct. Had to go to a football scrimmage this morning.
I am sad you did not hear Bobby Macho and Vince talking about Hillary and Bill Clinton's siblings.
Oh, really?
Right. I didn't take that many notes for this match, but I did write down that Bobby wanted to give us a scoop that Bastion Booger was the real brother to Hillary Clinton. And that McMahon wanted to apologize on behalf of Bobby the Brain, and I doubt McMahon was serious about that.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'm also talking about this match. Then that Crush gave a horrible back body drop to Bastion, but at least he tried. Then he at least halfway made up with an okay drop kick, which kicked Booger outside to the ring. Then Bobby did mention, look at that hump. And McMahon said, what is up with you and that hump? And Bobby said, I've never seen a man with a hump like that before.
That sounds like that should be a song.
Yeah. The lovely lady humps. Check it out.
Exactly.
Made me think about that when I heard those two go back at it. Then Baxton put Crush into a crushing bear hug. Then Macho said, I'm happy this isn't Smell-O-Vision. Aha! Because I guess Bastion Booger.
So is he just like a humanitarian? Because he's there, so he should smell it himself.
Well, because they were talking about how bad Bastion Booger smells.
Oh, okay.
So Macho was
just looking out for the viewers, I guess.
Yes. Macho was saying that he is happy that television screen isn't a Smell-O-Vision screen.
Oh, I understand. Okay, got it.
Then, Let's see. Oh, I did write down, did crushed knee, booger, and then nuts to get out of the bear hug. Because it kind of looked like it, but booger's belly is so big it kind of looked like that. Then a crush slammed booger a few times, or slammed him, yeah, body slammed him a few times to get the victory, and obviously won. So I gave this match a 13 over 10 star match.
I don't even know what that is. 1 3/10?
It would be 1 3/10 star, because I put down 1 1/5 star, but yeah, it would be 1 3/10 star, huh?
You got it.
Whatever, I guess I put down a little bit. I felt like this match was a little bit better than the match before. And that commentary made me laugh.
Nice.
Then we go to, I'm sorry you didn't watch the rest of this, because, okay, we go to the New York Stadium with somebody who I don't know, with Macho Man.
Oh, no.
Saying that he was going to a body slam Yokozuna at the Body Slam Challenge on 4th of July.
Pause the recording.
And we're back from pausing the recording, and Beverly, who was that mystery guy with Macho Man Savage and the New York Stadium?
Okay, so is that Giant Stadium? Apparently, that is Joe Morris. I think I remember. He's from like the 80s. He's not super well known, at least not for me. Maybe in New York, people are like, "Oh, he's my favorite running back." But yeah,
because I did mention to you when we had the show on pause that I felt like I was Brian Alvarez from FRWOnline.com, who tag teams with Dave Meltzer, because he is known for recording shows and pausing the recording to look something up.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I made the comment to you that I feel like I'm Brian Alvarez.
Awesome.
So yeah, then yeah. So we figure out who was with Macho. Then
yes,
Joe. We go to a slim. Now
I want to talk about that because I just watched it.
Oh, then talk about it then.
I love that Joe Morris. First, he goes, "I gotta put my sunglasses on to be like you, Macho." So he puts on a pair of sunglasses, and then he goes, "I'm going to slam Yokozuna for you, Macho."
Well, it made me smile that his promo was super short.
It was terrible. Yokozuna makes me so happy.
Yokozuna. Then we go to a Slim Jim commercial with the Macho one.
Awesome.
Then we go to a commercial plug-in WWF Royal Rumble on the Super Nintendo. I popped because I love that game. I bought that game when my local video store back in Cambridge, where I grew up before college, the video store closed down, and I bought that game because I absolutely love Royal Rumble on Super Nintendo. And once in a great while, I would bring out my Super Nintendo and plug it in and play WWF Royal Rumble for hours on end.
Good man.
Because I would play Ric Flair, Mr. Perfect, Shawn Michaels. I even play Yokozuna once in a while. I love that game.
Good.
Then we come back with the commentators putting over what we just saw from Raw this episode. McMahon put over the Kid and Bam Bam Bigelow and Mr. Perfect for the next week Raw.
Right.
Then Bobby said that, you know, Mr. Perfect is a loser and backstabber and all that fun jazz.
I like that when people don't forget stuff like that.
Makes me smile.
You know what I mean? Like, he's easy enough. Bobby could just, you know, fall into basic bad guy, just like, oh, you know, whatever, he's a loser. But, you know, he's got the added portion of, you know, remembering that backstory and being like, yeah, he's a backstabber, whatever, all that stuff.
So we may as well go into before we go into the main event star and driver that I emailed you about a week and a half ago, or I think maybe about a week or so ago.
Okay.
About the big bump I took at work.
Yes.
I want to
be sad.
I'd like to talk about Robin Williams. Since the previous two episodes that we'd done was, you know, pre-recorded a few weeks ago because I had a wedding to go to a couple weekends ago, and last week was SummerSlam, and we wanted to do a couple pre-recorded episodes for we can take a few weekends off. But first, my big bump. I was stacking a 53-foot trailer, which was pretty tall. I was on a step stool. It was for the Rochester branch out here in Minnesota. And I was up on a step stool and trying to reach to the top of the trailer. And somehow the step stool gave out on me, and I fell, hit back of my head on the side of the trailer, twisted my back, scratched my arm pretty bad, and I strained my back.
Oh, no.
And it was painful, you know, just even bending over to tie my shoes, it hurt bad. Even bending over to pick up a 5-pound box, my back hurt like heck.
Oh, no.
So it hurt probably for 4 or 5 days, then it got better, but it was horrible. And after that, I'm like, I do not know how pro wrestlers take bumps 4, 5, 6 nights a week.
Yeah, I don't know either.
After I took, granted, you know, they're more protected and all that, but just that one bump I took, that was horrible. I don't know how wrestlers do it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Then also, you know, because the pre-recording programs, we didn't get a chance to talk about the sad, tragic passing of Robin Williams. That, obviously, if you guys haven't heard yet, you guys are living underneath more of a rock than I do. But, Robin Williams committed suicide, a week or so ago now?
Yeah, I'd say about a week and a half, yeah.
Yeah, and, he committed suicide because of depression, and just wanted to, you know, give our condolences to the Williams family, because I know Robin Williams has, you know, brought a lot of people many a laughs over the years, for many a decades, and he's been in a few films of few of my favorite films as Flubber and Dead Poets Society and all that, and just makes me sad to hear that Robin Williams took his own life because of depression, because he felt like that was the only way out from feeling like crap.
It's sad stuff.
So yeah, I just wanted to, you know, take a little bit of time from the podcast to say, you know, if you guys are dealing with depression or any kind of mental illness, you know, seek somebody out, seek professional help. You know, there's people out there to listen to you, and I want you guys to know that you guys are loved and are appreciated.
That was very nice. That's the nicest thing that's ever been said on Main Event Status Radio.
And it might be a very rare thing for us to say, because, you know, we want to do this podcast to, you know, for an hour or so every week or every other week or whatever we get a chance to do an episode, and you know, we want to bring entertainment to you guys for an hour or so every episode that we do, and just wanted to mention that to, you know, about, because Robin Williams, you know, touched a lot of people's lives, and depression, you know, mental illness runs in my family, so I wanted to take a little bit of time to mention that on the podcast. So we might as well go into the main event star and the jobber for this week.
All right.
I can go first if you want.
Okay, you can go first.
Okay. The jobber had to be Iron Mark Sharp, because I keep on thinking his first name is Mark, which is Mike.
My jobber is Jim Campen of the Green Bay Packers.
Fair enough.
Because I don't know who he is.
Understandable. And my main event status star is the one, the only, the showstopper himself, the Intercontinental Champion, Shawn Michaels.
And I will go with his counterpart, Kamala.
I had to say Shawn Michaels because he can bring a good match out of just about anybody.
And I will do Kamala for him being in that match and also for his great music.
And I was going to say, I had to give Kamala props to being able to bring out a comedy match out of Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yes. So, talk about Kamala. I know you don't get a chance to listen to podcasts much, but did you hear that Kamala was on the Steve Austin podcast this past Tuesday?
I did not.
It was an interesting listen to it. If you have, I think the show is like an hour and a half long.
Yeah.
On podcastone.com, so it's well worth a listen.
Did he talk about his recording career?
His what?
His recording career, his music?
I don't know. He didn't know.
Push it!
Pull it. I remember you made me listen to, a few songs of his.
That's because it's great. It's the inner workings of the WWF in the 80s. Kamala, push it.
Yes. Then we might as well go into the top five list and how you picked it up for this week. So you want to talk about the top five list for this episode.
Yeah, I'll introduce it. So I usually base what I'm going to do, pick the top five as, just by the thumbnail that's on the WWE Network. And the one that was on was of Adam Bomb, Stickiest Tongue Out. And that made me think of doing the top five as the top five scariest wrestlers to you when you were a little young wrestling fan.
Makes sense. So do you want me to start, or do you want to start with the top five?
You start so that I can have the last number one.
Okay, as we were discussing pre-recording that, my 1 through 4 I was able to, pick off right away, and my number five I had to scratch my head a little bit, because my number five is Kevin Sullivan.
Oh, okay.
Because, when I was a kid, he was in WCW doing the Dungeon of Doom stuff, and it was a watered-down version of the cult leader stuff he did in Florida, from the, 70s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But I know we listened to Old School Wrestling Podcast, and a few episodes ago, they talked about, the whole Adim. I can't remember, I think, Abu Adim or whatever.
Yep, he was in it.
Yeah, and all that, and talked about Kevin Sullivan and the Prince of Darkness stuff and all that, and just, I guess if I was growing up when, watching Florida when that was happening, that would have scared the living crap out of me. Because I kind of vaguely remember Kevin Sullivan in Dungeon of Doom and WCW in the mid-90s, and that did kind of spook the, 5, 6, 7-year-old dirty dog back then.
All right.
If that was the watered-down version, I would have been probably crapping my undies back when it was actually a lot more heated back in Florida.
Yeah, probably.
So, Kevin Sullivan's my number five.
Nice. Okay, my number five is somebody who appeared on this show, Yokozumo. Yokozumo really scared me. I don't know, when I was 5, 6, right? Because, he never talked. He was huge. He was just crushing everybody. It seemed like he could never be hurt, all those things. That's why he's my number five.
Okay, my number four is very similar, but my number four is Big Van Vader.
Ah, okay.
Because another big monster guy, I wrote down that, mid-90s, he was in WCW. And I know one show that we talked about before that Beverly, you and I watched back probably a few years ago was 1993 Starrkid with Vader defending the WCW title against Ric Flair in his career. And how, during the early 90s, WCW, I used to rent on VHS, my local video store, that Vader would always seem like the big, big jock bully guy. And that scared the crap out of me because back in grade school, I wasn't in any athletics or whatever. So I can see a kid like Vader coming and bullying me just because I was kind of a nerd.
Oh, sorry, man.
Oh, that's fine. Nobody really did pick on me. I was usually the bully back in the day, but...
Oh.
Talk about bullies. Back in elementary school, I beat up this one kid because him and his girlfriend were fighting, and I had a crush on his girlfriend.
Whoa.
So I guess I played the Vader during that recess.
Nice.
Who's your number four?
My number four, another guy who was on this one, the Adam Bomb. And he scared me, because he was... Those eyes were creepy and the goggles were creepy.
I think for this episode, he had yellowish, greenish eyes.
Yeah, That scared the crap out of me. Did not like that at all.
Yeah.
As a little 5, 6-year-old.
So my number three debuted in the WWF, I think, 95, 96.
Okay.
And he kind of talked like this.
Okay.
He would tell us to have a nice day.
Oh, got it.
My number three was Mankind when he first debuted in the WWF because, you know, wearing that leather mask, you know, from the boiler room, you know, sitting down, swaying back and forth and all that. And, you know, pulling out his hair, front part of his head was shaved, you know, with bald spots because he pulled out his hair.
Right.
Just his character scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And just him attacking the Undertaker, sticking his two fingers in Undertaker's mouth and pushed down on the nerve in the mouth, on the mandible. Yeah, no thanks. I don't he scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
Yeah, I would agree with that one. That's a good pick. That's a good pick. My number three kind of goes just with that. Mine is The Undertaker. Again, I guess like the theme is kind of like the indestructibleness of the person, and that kind of always scared me, I guess. When he first debuted, you know, he had Paul Bearer, who was creepy too. Yeah, that's definitely why he is my number three.
My number two has to be Isaac Yankem, DDS.
Oh, okay.
Because, yeah, I think he was around, what, 1995? So I would have been seven. And, you know, a seven-year-old dirty dog was scared of the dentist. Because I hated back then getting my teeth cleaned and all that, you know, with what the dentist put in your mouth to take, you know, x-rays or whatever of your teeth and how that hurt my gums a lot. And I hated brushing my teeth back then. I hated flossing and all that. And Isaac Yankem had nasty yellow teeth or whatever. And, you know, just being an evil dentist with Jerry the King Lawler face and Bret Hart, I just hated Isaac Yankem. Oh, I remember he had ugly, yellow, curly hair. And I don't know why I remember that, but that just, or I guess probably more reddish than anything, but that just grossed me out with his yellow stained teeth. So Isaac Yankem was my number two.
Awesome. That's good. All right. My number two, you've already mentioned it, but mine is Vader. And it's almost for a different reason, though, because I got so freaked out at that helmet that he would wear.
You remember that? Yeah, the steam coming out.
Yeah, shoot the steam out. Oh, man, that scared the crap out of me, man. When he'd come down in that thing. And then, again, he would just beat the crap out of everybody, and he seemed like he could never be hurt. All that. That is why he's my number two.
So before I say who my number one is, I want to ask you, Beverly, did you ever play WWF Warzone on the PlayStation 1?
Did not.
Okay. To explain my number one, before I go into it more, in the, I can't remember, it was like the title challenge thing. There, I can't remember what it was called back then, but it's like, you gotta go through so many guys to win the Intercontinental title, then you gotta go through so many guys to win the WWF title, then you keep defending the title until you lose it and all that, and you gotta start all over. And once in a while, you would get a grudge match. You know, like somebody would challenge you. Obviously the computer, but the computer would challenge you. They would have, you know, all the guys in it, you know, they would have like a video with them challenging you to a grunge match. And my number one is Kane.
Okay.
Because I still remember to this day playing WWF Warzone on my PlayStation. I think I was in elementary school at this time, and Kane challenged me. He didn't say one word. In his video package was him in a warehouse, an abandoned warehouse with you know, the building burning behind him. And you hear kids chanting, "Burn in hell! Burn in hell!
Oh my God!
Burn in hell!" Yeah. And both my brothers were doing after school activities like football or work or whatever. My mom was still at work. I was scared poopless that I called my grandmother crying because of it. And my grandmother had to calm me down and all that, and said everything's gonna be okay. And because of that, well, I was never scared of Kane. You know, Kane's character. I was intrigued by him when he debuted, but because of that video package, Kane is my number one most scariest wrestler.
Well, that scares me just then. I wasn't even there.
Because obviously back then, you know, Kane didn't speak and all that, so just, you know, him on the screen, you know, in abandoned warehouses, you know, stuff on fire, and yeah, hearing kids chant, burn in hell. Yeah, no thanks.
Wow.
I'm happy I brought you some entertainment, Beverly. I hope the fans of Main Event Status Radio enjoyed me explaining that story.
Burn in hell. My number one is from a little before the time that we're looking at now, going back maybe 91, 92. My number one is Papa Shango.
Oh.
Yeah, all the vignettes and him, you know, like looking back now, it's super cartoony, like making Mean Gene puke and stuff. And
well, the whole Ultimate Warrior sweating blood or whatever.
Right, but man, when I was like 4 or 5, that scared the crap out of me. So, yeah, whenever he came on the screen, I would run out of the room. I would either shut off the TV, hope that something else, you know, is on when I get back in. Yeah, very, very frightening to me.
All I want to say about Papa Shango is that voodoo ain't easy, man. Voodoo ain't easy, man.
Yes, sir.
Which he would go on to be a pimp?
Oh, of course, yes.
Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy. G-O-D-F-E-T-H-E-R. Hoes start running when they see my car. I love
see, all
that.
I know is the first. All I know is the first part, not the verse.
I always thugged and bugged to that song off the WWF Aggression album.
Awesome.
So, yeah, that is our episode for the week. Episode, was it 38 for Monday Night Raw from June 28th, 1993 from the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York. Poughkeepsie, whatever.
Poughkeepsie?
Polipsky? I don't know!
Awesome.
But do you have any closing comments or anything to plug this week, Beverly?
Nope, other than the Twitter at Beverly Hills MES.
You know, I know, I did finally figure it out. I did create a new Facebook fan page for Main Event Status Radio.
Nice.
It is now facebook.com/main event status radio. Again, nice. With an echo, facebook.com/main event status radio. I got that figured out. So, yeah, find that one, not the first one I created. And also for me on Twitter, on the Twitter machine, on the Twitter, at Dirty Dog MES. Dog as in D-A-W-G, Dirty Dog MES. And, yeah, talk to us and all that. So I guess, yeah, for this week, for this episode, episode number 5, this is the Dirty Dog for Beverly Hills. We'll talk to you guys after the matches.